Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Walter, the host of True Wealth. True Wealth is a weekly radio program sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is located at 3201 North Division inside of the large and beautiful Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza. If you haven't come to see it, we would welcome you here. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044 in Spokane. Outside of Spokane, toll-free, 877-827-COIN. Our toll-free number has a few different ways to slice it, and I'll lay them out for you, and maybe one of them will stick. The number is 877-827-2646. The last four digits are COIN. 2646. So it's 1-877-827-2646. Well, a while ago, we were looking for a catchy phone number, and I was out on one of these websites, and I was playing around, and I typed in 1-877-TAP-COIN, and up came my phone number, and it said it was taken. And I thought, and we didn't realize that we had, there's a company out there that used 1-877-TAP-GOLD. And you guys have probably heard that company, and they're one of those commission-driven companies that I'm always warning you against so you don't flush all your money down the toilet and get taken advantage of. Well, we're also 1-877-TAP-COIN, or TAP-COINS. The S doesn't work, but it helps you write it out or remember it a little bit. And so anyway, there's a little explanation. We can also be reached through our website at coinsplus.com. We don't really do a lot with our website. It's a nice website. It's informational. I write some stuff here and there. We're just so busy all the time. And we're always kind of, you know, we're always looking for those special employees. Growth is an amazing thing, and we've just seen tremendous growth over the years. We're very wholesale-based company. We're very Christian-owned and operated, but we're business people, and we just want to be fair to people. We don't focus on the money. We don't sit around and say, how much money did we make today? We just know that if you do business and you do it right and you honor the Lord in what you do, that He'll honor you. And a lot of these companies that you're running into out there on the radio station and all over the television now, folks, these aren't Christian-owned and operated. They're all over. There's a standard model of how precious metals and coin investment companies operate, and it goes like this. You call these companies up, and you tell them you want to buy gold and silver. They tell you, okay, they push you a lot into gold. Well, they'll do silver dollars too, but let's talk about gold. They'll push you into gold, and they'll say, look, you don't want bullion. It's confiscatable. You need numismatic coins, pre-33 U.S. gold coins, because they're non-confiscatable, okay? And I've explained this over and over, and I'll explain it again. First of all, there's nothing wrong with what they're selling you. What they're selling you are good investments. However, the problem lies in the pricing. They take a coin. Okay, if you buy an ounce of gold, whether it be an American Eagle or a Krugerrand, and gold is $900 an ounce, and a company marks it up 8 or 10%, you understand that. And actually, I want to step back. American Gold Eagles sell right now for approximately 10% over spot. We're not marking them up that much. We're buying them at around 7% over spot and selling them at around 10. Okay, that's basically the way it works. So the whole premium on a coin is not our profit. These coins, a lot of them trade at a premium over spot. Those premiums continue to grow as time goes on. So people who bought Eagles 4 years ago might have paid 5% over spot, and they come and sell them now, and they're getting a higher percentage than what they paid. That's a nice thing that works in favor of the customer. There is a fluctuation of premiums based on market availability and all that stuff. But just so you understand, if you buy an ounce of gold and there's a little markup on it, you're going to be okay with that. If they move you into a semi-numismatic coin and it's $1,800, you know that it's collectible, and you don't know if that's a fair price or not, but the guy on the phone seems half decent. You think you should probably be able to trust him. Well, one thing all these companies do consistently is they charge about 40% profit. It's because they have these high-paid commission salespeople. It's consistent no matter where you go. I'm sorry, it's a fact. It is not the case here at Coins Plus. Coins Plus, our gross profit at the end of the year is 4%. Our net profit's about 1 point some percent. we sell tens and tens of millions of dollars a year. And so that 1% works out in the long run. We've got a pretty good sized overhead too. But we are small margin wholesale based sellers. There's all kinds of other things they'll throw at you. They'll throw the French or Swiss 20 francs that are dated before 1933. They tell you they're numismatic, and they'll get big premiums. The main radio show you guys listening to on a daily basis, they're selling the 20 francs right now at over $300 each, and we're selling them for under $200 each, more like 180 something each. Folks, this is a fact. People call and find this out, and they can't believe it's the same coin. It's the same coin. I spoke to a customer this week who was talking about a company he saw on Fox News with Gordon Liddy holding the gold bars up, and they told him over the phone they only made 27, I think they went up to 39%. But one thing I know about that company in particular, the other thing these companies do is they have a purchasing company or an acquisition company and then a selling company. So the acquisition company will go buy the coins, mark them up 10%, hand them off to the selling company. So in addition to the profit that they tell you they're making, which is exorbitant, ridiculous, and unreasonable, they will also have another 10% packed in there. Now, does this mean that semi-numismatic coins are bad? No, no, no. Semi-numismatic coins are great investments. I want to repeat that. Semi-numismatic coins are great investments. The coins that they refer to as non-confiscatable are great investments. Don't run just to bullion. If you're investing a sizable amount of money, you want some of the pre-33 gold for a number of reasons. One, there is pressure from both the collectible market and the bullion market. These things have done incredibly well. They will gain on average 10 to 15% per year more than the precious metals gain. Do not get so narrow-minded, because it's a little bit tough to discern this stuff, that you just go with straight bullion. We recommend balanced portfolios, and those of you who've dealt with us over the years and have our balanced portfolios understand we put you into areas where value exists, and we make you some nice money. We're also helping you preserve your assets. We've got different tiers. We've got stuff that's immediately liquid. We've got stuff for midterm, long-term, and we put a little bit of heirloom stuff in there too. We recommend it. So please don't say that I said numismatic coins are bad, and please don't button your hatch so tight that you can't see the big picture. What we really try to be is a company that you can trust. A company you can come to, you can give us your money, you're going to get a straight shot, you're going to get the same kind of deal that our relatives or friends are going to get, and that's it across the board, folks. Across the board, we're fair, we're the best, we don't have skeletons in the closet, we don't have to look over our shoulder when we go home at night. We're just very straight up and very honest. Yes, I'll repeat again, we do make a profit. We make a few percent, but it's nothing like what you're used to seeing out there. And it sounds weird that I'd blanket all these companies the same, but folks, it's a fact. A lot of these companies just have way too much overhead. I don't know why they have to charge those kind of premiums, but they put commission salespeople on it. Everyone here makes a salary. We do give some bonuses out that has nothing to do with the profit generated by the employee. It has to do with the hours that they worked and how hard they worked and how well they worked. And also at the end of the year, it's in the Christmas spirit, we do that too. But these people do not stand there and say, oh my gosh, I need to maximize profit on this customer so I can take home a nice paycheck to my wife. No. So just be aware of that. The confiscation thing, folks, there was a confiscation in 33. And it was a tragedy. And how that worked was the government bought coins back from the people, and they paid them $20 an ounce for gold. After they'd accumulated about 80% of it, they basically increased the price of gold by 75%. While the Depression was in full force, real estate prices were collapsing left and right. Our government, in cahoots with the Federal Reserve Bank, basically confiscated the wealth of the people knowingly and intentionally and handed them Federal Reserve notes. I have a show that I'm working on, not for this week, but next week, that really goes over this stuff. I mean, it is a tragedy. But one thing to keep in mind, people worry about what's confiscatable, what's not. Folks, right now, nothing's confiscatable. If they get down to that, you know, we're going to work with you. Back then, if you had bullion that was supposed supposed to be confiscated, you would have brought it into a dealer. He'd take the bullion in, trade you for something that was okay to own, and then he'd transfer that on to the government. At that time, it wasn't that big of a deal. Now, if they get into a confiscation where they kick down your door, drive up in a tank, kick down your door, and take your gold, you're not going to be able to do anything about it anyway, so you don't worry about that. However, it's important to understand, I am a firm believer in God's word, and he has clearly shown that in the end days, the last days, the days of judgment, people will cast their gold and silver in the streets, which tells us what? It tells us that it lasted till the end. Also, he's made clear references to the fact that he's paved the streets of heaven in gold. There's multiple references to gold in heaven. And the bottom line is, as I've said before, when Christ came on earth, the first gifts he was given was gold, frankincense, and myrrh, which came from the Magi, the wise men from the East, which came from Egypt, where Jesus spent his youth. And there is a Jewish tradition that says when Adam and Eve left the garden, and they spent all their time trying to get back into the garden, kind of the last token was God let a cherub go back into the garden to bring them a memento from the garden, and the cherub gave them gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, this is documentedly written prior to the time of Christ. It's a fact that that's known in the book of Adam and Eve, and it's a fact that it was written then, so it isn't just something that they wrote to parallel with Christ. It's interesting, I don't know much about frankincense and myrrh. It's a smell that was apparently pleasing to the Lord that he gave to his son, that he let the gift of, to his son Christ go. For some reason, they wanted to write that into the New Testament. I think it's because of the parallel with the books of Adam and Eve, which were saved by the Essenes. And anyway, I know sometimes the books that were canonized out of the Bible, talking about those freak some people out because they're just so sure that our canon is exactly correct and perfect. And a lot of these were removed at the Council of Laodicea. I've studied the Council of Laodicea in great depth. I think there was a lot of politics going on. This was done under the Constantinian rule, the Byzantine times, and where the Catholic Church had merged government and religion. And I know that the hardcore Catholics don't like to admit that, but it's a well-known fact that they had done that. And they had a lot of reasons why they pulled some scripture out with the canon. Pretty much anything that had some pretty fantastical stories in it, they pulled out, although they left those same stories in books like Genesis and stuff, but in a way that they could essentially minimize it. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's a book called the Book of Giants, you know, and then it explains how Enoch communicated with the giants, telling them that the great deluge was coming to destroy the whole earth. Well, in Genesis chapter 6, it tells us clearly that the sons of God had come down from where, we don't know, but it does tell us that Lucifer was cast from the heavens down to earth. There's people that think there was actually physical rain, physical realm. You know, we've seen where Mars has signs of water, different levels of sea salt as they measure it. We've got the asteroid belt, which people clearly believe you at one point was a planet in our solar system. And actually, if you do the mathematical calculations of the orbits, there could have been or should have been a planet there to maintain orbits in our system, because everything God creates is designed perfectly. And so there's people that believe that Satan, there, it also refers to Satan in Ezekiel as walking on the rolling rocks throughout the heavens, you know, stepping through the planets somehow. We don't understand. And I'm not saying it's a fact. I'm just telling you what's out there. But the Dead Sea Scrolls did include the Book of Giants, which was written before the time of Christ considerably. And it was important to them to preserve Scripture. And it was important for them to tell us the stories that had taken place on the earth prior to the Great Flood. And I believe that the earth prior to the Great Flood was very much like Lord of the Rings type activity. It's hard for us to understand. It depends on your God. If you're a little too stringent and everything's just structured all the time and there's never been anything different than what we've experienced, then that doesn't come easy to you. But at the same time, then your view of heaven is a big stale church with painted white walls, and I think heaven's going to be pretty far out. Those of you who know me know that I really do seek and search for truth, and I believe there's a lot more truth out there than just what we have in God's Word. Now, God's word is completely, totally sufficient, the Bible that we use, absolutely. But let's face it, when you need wisdom, not all wisdom is coming from one source. God created man, God created earth, God created a lot of amazing things. An in-depth study of the Great Pyramid is far phenomenal. It leans towards God. It's built in biblical proportions. It's built using the Jewish cubit. Its length and width is exactly 365.2454, whatever, the exact number of days in a solar year, which supposedly they didn't know by then. The height versus the width is, the angle is based on the fraction of pi, which they believed no one knew until far later. It's believed to have been built in 2500 and some BC. It's got unexplainable water erosion on the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid. Well, we know that that's from the Great Flood, the Great Deluge, and there's a lot of markings in the inner sanctuary, in the hall that you go down. If you start at zero when you enter the door and count in sacred cubits, there's marks in the wall that notate every significant event in the history of God and God's people, including, you know, the captivity of Israel, the exodus of Israel, even the birth of Christ. If you count down, there's the descending chamber, and as soon as the date of Christ's birth takes place, the chamber again begins to ascend. That chamber or hallway, which is tremendously huge, goes directly at an angle, pointing directly towards the towns of Bethlehem and Jerusalem, and on it goes. Early historians like Herodotus, and I believe it was Socrates, wrote that the pyramid used to be covered with a beautiful limestone type of a granite that reflected light 100 miles. And it said that there was a writing on those called Aberu, which sounds like early Hebrew, and those were torn down by the Muslims and used to build their temple there in Cairo. However, it was believed that Enoch is the one that built the temple. Egyptian history talks about the first pharaoh, Cheops, which is translated Enoch, as a man who came out of the east suddenly when Egypt was in serious turmoil, worshiping many gods. He came out of the east. The history says he took the whole land over without raising a fist or a weapon, because his god was so great he had some kind of mystical control or ability to control people or lead them, I guess is the way it's truly written. And then it says he made them tear down all their altars to other gods, and he made one altar to the one true God. And then he reigned for X number of years, things were good. And then it says that he left and was caught up in a chariot of fire from an island in the Nile. The other thing that's interesting, you know, the length and width is 365. The number of days that Enoch lived on earth was 365. And the Great Pyramid, first of all, there's only three geographical places on earth that it could have been built. It covers 13.25 acres. And it's on 13.25 acres, its level is off less than 1/4 of 1 inch. Physically impossible by today's standards. Absolutely impossible. Not a coincidence. It's bedded into the bedrock and on. It's impossible to build architecturally today. But if you draw a line north and south through the Great Pyramid versus east and west, it cuts the landmass of the earth into 4 perfect quadrants. It's the only place on earth that this could be done. It's also said in tradition that God told Enoch or Noah, I can't remember, somebody to bury Adam in the middle of the earth. And that was supposed to be Adam's tomb. Somehow he wasn't buried there, or he was. The tomb's empty now. We don't know. This is just a lot of information that's pretty well documented, and it's quite phenomenal. The facts of the pyramid just continue. Christ went there when he was young. Isaiah 19 tells us that at the end times, there will be a monument to the Lord. It says it's going to be in the center of Egypt, and later on in the same verse, it says at the border of Egypt. Well, when the pyramid was built, it was built on the border between North and South Egypt. The king and the queen merged. and then it became the exact center of Egypt. It's also right on the border of what they call the Nile, the Delta Quadrant, the Nile Delta, which is exactly the border between the flatland and the mountains. And I mean, it's clear. And on it goes. And that you may find that interesting, you may not, but I really seek truth. I think there's a lot of information out there. There was the Library of Alexandria was the greatest library on earth, and it was destroyed by a Muslim leader. I can't remember what his name was, but he said everything there was in scrolls. He said anything that's here, if we need it, it'll be written in the Quran. He said, and if it's not written in the Quran, then it's not needed, and therefore he destroyed everything that was there. And there's words, history tells us that the actual writings of Noah that he carried with him on the ark were in that library, among with many other things. They respected their writing of all religions at that time, and this guy torched it to the ground. So some reason God let a lot of this information wither away. I think a lot of it, if we don't handle it properly, could take our focus off the appropriate things. But it is important to know and think, you know, what happened on the earth before that flood? Something tremendous took place. I mean, people think there's a bunch of tribes running around and God wiped them out. Folks, there was 2,000 years. Man was allowed to live 800 or 900 years, and they were better than we are today. Our DNA continues to decline. They find skeletons of huge men, 11, 12 feet tall all over. They don't show us that much because it messes with evolution. If you've listened to like Kent Hovind or Ken Ham or whatever, you know, these people out here. But a simple population study using simple calculations, just figuring if they each had 4 children starting at 100 years old, by the time of the flood, you've got 12 billion people on the earth. You wouldn't have the same mortality rate that we have. We need to think there was a huge population on this earth that was killed for some reason. And God, the only thing he tells us in the Word is that the sons of God came down and entered the women and created giants, Nephilim. And this is, something happened. There was something, I think it was the land of the giants, folks. I think it was Lord of the Rings going on down here. And God changed the spiritual rules after that. The book of Jude tells us clearly that he bound, that the angels, or the sons of God, left their domain, essentially. And because of that, God bound them up with chains until the time of the end. Is that a physical place? According to Jewish tradition, they were bound physically in a valley, on the deepest valley in earth. And it says that Noah and someone else took them there. Am I saying this is a fact? No, but I don't know what is a fact. But it tells us, Jewish tradition tells us, that they're actually chained up inside the earth somewhere waiting for the end because they're immortal. They're part God or they're part angel. They can't be killed. And so there's just some tremendous rich stories out there that go back in time. But something had to happen for God's wrath to come down like that. And yet he still had a story of redemption, and he had the story of Noah. Wow, there's a lot of amazing things in our spiritual history. Well, I was supposed to finish my speech from the Tea Party this week, and I went off on a wild tangent. I apologize. I guess I would say the moral of the story is God is huge, and God allows huge things to happen. And we in this country have one of two huge things coming. We've got the huge collapse, or we've got the huge turnaround, revival, and revolt. And the Bible tells us who can stand against the beast in the end times. That's my fear. Well, I didn't cover the rest of the speech that I gave at the Tea Party, so I'll touch on an article I found this week. Recent study lists 6 reasons housing prices may not recover for decades, if ever. Number 1, once the bubble in an asset class pops, it never reflates. It is simply a truism that bubbles never reflate, ever. The tulip bubble valuations did not rise to stratospheric heights after the tulip craze popped. If you guys don't know about the tulip craze in Europe, look it up. It was crazy. It's like the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ.com bubble did not reinflate either, for the very good reason that bubbles are never based on rational valuations. They're based on the psychological state of mania, which cannot be reinstated once lost. Number 2, inflation destroys the gains away. Even if prices started to climb, they'll be battling against runaway U.S. inflation. With all the new government debt being issued, we're bound to face a tremendous jump in inflation. This means that even if your house is worth as much as it was in 2006, 4 years from now, in real terms, it will have lost value. Based on recent inflation predictions, the next 4 years in the U.S. should conservatively see inflation levels of 200% or more. That means that $10,000 in 4 years will buy the equivalent of $3,300 today. Number three, in troubled times, people move to conservative, low-risk, and low-maintenance investments. Greater and greater levels of pressure are being felt on the precious metals like gold, silver, and even platinum metals groups as investors worldwide are behaving like animals before winter, storing up reserves to protect themselves. At the current rates that worldwide consumers are acquiring the precious metals, it is predicted that the entire world's gold and silver supplies could literally dry up in the next 24 months. The only variable that could keep the precious metals flowing is the likelihood of some profit taking as metals skyrocket to 5, 10, or even 20 times their current levels due to runaway worldwide inflation. People may then liquidate some of their holdings to purchase food and necessities or to purchase things like real estate for pennies on the dollar as we saw during the Great Depression. There could also be simple profit taking as investors see their investments jump to levels never before seen or imagined. Let's face it, the precious metals have been artificially held down by the world bankers for over 100 years. By simply adjusting for world inflation until now and over the next few years, it is easily arguable that the rare coin and precious metals investments could post 3,000% gains in a very short period of time. And I, of course, don't have time to hit all the three others, but I'll touch on them. One, if we somehow avoid inflation, deflation will also result in sinking housing prices. It says, obviously, our current predicament makes deflation a scant concept. However, in deflation, debt grows even more burdensome as money becomes more valuable and wages and income drop. As a result, assets dependent on debt, that is, real estate, drop in value. In deflation, real estate becomes a capital trap, which loses value as cash gains in value. As incomes plummet, so do rents. 5. The combination of low interest rates and loose lending that fueled the boom is dead. We know that. The government's still pushing rates down. They're doing everything they can to try to resurrect this thing. But folks, we got mortgages in the fours and it's not working. And we were recklessly out of control to get where we're at. 5. It says demographics, all probable future population growth can be easily accommodated with the existing housing inventory, which means there won't be a population growth driven surge in real estate prices. The market is currently saturated with 6 years or more in the housing inventory. So in a nutshell, there is a huge surplus of houses. Thanks again for tuning in to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. Coins Plus can be reached in Spokane at 444-0044, outside of Spokane toll-free, 877-TAP-COIN or 877-827-COIN. Take care, God bless, and have a fantastic week.